We've been blessed this morning by two stories of three women. And to be honest, as I read these stories, I don't know how they did it. I don't know where it came from within them to do what they did. Now, I know that story that Jesus, you know, from the Gospel of Mark, you know, the story of the widow, is very brief. She appears for but a fraction of a sentence, really. A moment in time. And yet, what is revealed in here and what is seen by Jesus is a woman who gave everything. She risked everything. Now, in comparison to what the others gave, wasn't much. But in the context of what she had and what they had, there was a vast difference in their offering. But how could she? How could she risk everything? Risking everything. We're talking about faith here. We're talking about that strange territory of faith and what it means, truly means. In our Hebrew story, one of my most favorite stories in what we call the Old Testament, we have a story of great, great risk. Now, for those of you who are familiar with it, let this be a reminder. For you who don't know the story, let me tell it to you as briefly as possible. In this story, there was a woman by the name of Naomi. She was from Bethlehem. Does that town sound familiar? I think we will be singing about it in about a month. She was from Bethlehem. And she and her husband did what people often do. When you can't find employment where you are currently, you move somewhere else. You look to some foreign country to provide your sustenance. You know, I have to think of your family moving from Nigeria to Cameroon and starting a business there. You know, had to learn a whole different language, didn't you? Didn't they when they moved there? Which is probably what Naomi and her husband had to do, moving to Moab, which was on the other side of the Salt Sea, the big dead, what we call the Dead Sea. They moved there and they took their two sons with them. And you notice I'm not mentioning the sons, partially because I'm going by memory here, but also partially because they only are there in the story just for a fraction of time. This is not their story. Once they were over there, Naomi's husband died. I mean, he's gone in the very first few verses of this story. So it's just she and her sons, whom she raised as a single mother, and these sons went on to find two local women, Moabite women, whom they married. And all was going well until the day came when both sons, not just one, but both sons died. And in this story you have then three widows. Which in this day and age it is still hard to be a widow in this day and age, but nothing like it was back in those days when your great deal of your value and your worth and your ability to survive depended upon your connection to a man. And here these three women had none. And there were no children, no grandchildren. They were alone. And Naomi decides to do what often happens when bad times hit. Unlike Job, who just sat down and poured ashes over his head, she decided to go home to Bethlehem. There was at least some semblance of family and perhaps some little bit of property there for her. And so she turned to head that long road back. But along the way, she turned to her daughters-in-law, who both started out. And can you imagine being a daughter-in-law, thinking about leaving a home that you had never known any other, to go someplace you did not know? There were two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. And Naomi did her best to talk them out of following her. For she was lost at this point in basic bitterness, something she said later on when she finally got back to Bethlehem and was greeted by those who remembered her, and they said, "Oh, Naomi," and she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara," a word that means bitter. Naomi means pleasant. She was in no pleasant mood. She was lost in bitterness. And it was a long road back, and she sought practically the whole first chapter is her trying to talk her two daughters-in-law out of following her because they are younger. You know, for her to attach herself to some man, who could do that? But her daughters-in-law perhaps could find some semblance of a future there in Moab. One daughter-in-law relents and says, okay, kisses her and leaves. But Ruth, this non-Israelite woman, she has no part in the promise to Abraham, this promise to Jacob and Jacob's descendants, the Israelites. She is not a part of that story at all. And that's an important point to remember. This person has perhaps the most memorable lines in all of Scripture. Some of you know these words by heart, don't you? Where she says, Ruth says to Naomi, "Don't press me to leave you or turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There will I be buried." Now, sometimes we bring those words up at weddings, but this is spoken by a daughter-in-law to a mother-in-law. Those are risky words. Do you catch what it means? To leave everything, of course, at that point in time, there was not much. But to leave everything behind, even family, to follow Naomi back to a new land, to Bethlehem. And that's what they did. And of course, when they arrive, they're trying to figure out how they're going to survive. And we often read these stories about this time of year because it's the harvest. And we're towards the end of the harvest. I know we're not living in a rural area where we're so in tune with what's happening out in the fields and stuff. But, you know, we have our pumpkins and we have our cornucopias and the Thanksgiving, which is really a celebration of harvest having been gathered in. You know, is looking ahead to, you know, that time of year when there is no fresh fruit of the land and seeking to live through the winter. Well, this is the point in time where they come back and the fields are being cleared, the harvest is being gathered in, and Naomi, who is not capable of doing so, sends Ruth out to glean. The gleaning being a process that was the welfare system, if you will, back then. And it was built into the law of Moses. It was really built into the law of most countries back then. That when you harvest, you leave behind some of the grain for the poor to come and gather, that they might be able to have some sustenance. That's what gleaning means. And Ruth is sent out to glean. And it just so happens It just so happens that she ends up gleaning in the field of a fellow by the name of Boaz, who it just so happens is a kinsman, is a relative of Naomi. Now perhaps Naomi knew this, and perhaps there was some, you know, sometimes as we make our plans, we do know some things, but perhaps there is another hand involved in all of this. Do you think? And so she is out in the field, and the story of what she has done in following her mother has preceded her. And even Boaz takes notice of her and instructs the workers in the field, the male workers, who, let's be honest, that to be a woman working out in a field of men can be a very risky thing to do. Or what these men could do. But he instructs his workers to leave her alone. Why would he need to say that if it weren't a possibility? To leave her alone and to, in fact, leave for her a little bit more. I mean, be a little bit more sloppy, if you will, as you were gathering in. And this they do. And towards the end of the day, he even makes sure that she gets even more, which she takes back to Naomi. And here is this woman who is lost in bitterness, who has just said, to heck with Moab, I'm going home, whatever is there for me. And she is, overjoyed, and she concocts this plan. And this is one of the riskiest plans in all of Scripture. I have to tell you that, folks. I don't know if you caught it listening to it. Were you hearing what this plan involved? She was to kind of spruce herself up, to put on her best, to wash and put on all that perfume and everything else. And she is to go to the threshing floor. It's at night. And when all the work has been done, and the workers, including Boaz, are finished and have eaten and drunk and lie down for the evening, and all the lights are out. Are you catching some of what's coming up? She is to go over to him quietly and uncover his feet. Okay, can we be honest what this means? In Hebrew, the word feet is a euphemism. She is to uncover the bottom part of his body and to lay down next to him. That's what Naomi tells Ruth. Which is what gets me thinking, what made Ruth do this? Why would she do this? All sorts of problems, you know, can happen, don't you? This is a very risky move. This could mean any sort of things. I mean, the possibilities of what could happen are many. I don't need to go into all the possibilities, but they're there. But Ruth says, you know, she had said earlier, where you go, I will go. Well, you know, what you tell me to do, I will do. And she did. Okay, we skipped over in our reading, but let me briefly tell you what happened. Boaz, whose the bottom part of his body was uncovered, he woke up, wouldn't you? And he noticed there was a female presence right beside him. There was a moment of decision there. Would he do the right thing or not? That was the risk. I won't go into all the details, but he did the right thing. Here's an example. The story of Ruth is really a story of people doing what's right. And it follows the book of Judges, which ends with a terrifying story. And I'm not going to go into detail of it, but just read the last few chapters. It is a terrifying story of people doing what they think is right, but it's wrong. They're not doing what's right. They're doing the right things, but they're not doing what's right. And here is a story where Boaz takes it upon himself not to abuse this woman who is lying beside her, but to come up with a different scheme. A scheme that becomes a blessing for all concerned. He instructs her, you know, to go back, you know, before the light comes and anybody else awakes. And he knows that there is another kinsman who is a bit closer than her, who has the first right of redeeming her. And that was built into the law, this whole redeeming, that family was supposed to take care of family. And if a husband died, the next closest kinsman was supposed to take responsibility. But he was not the next closest. And so he arranges the next day to meet with the person who is the next closest. And he says, "Are you going to take up your responsibility?" And the person said, "Well, at first, yeah, but do you know what all this involves?" "Oh, it's not just that, it's more." "I don't know, I don't think so." "So you give up your right to redeem?" "Yeah." And so he takes it upon himself. And what we heard in the end is the ending of the story. But I return to that whole bit of what helps somebody to risk everything like that. And I asked the quilters that question. You missed it, Mary, because you weren't there. But I was asking, what would lead somebody to risk everything like that? And I know, Kay, you were saying, well, maybe receiving a sign. But did Ruth receive a sign? No, she just received some calling orders. You know, her mother-in-law, she was following, and she was just trying to do what's right. And this is a non-Israelite doing what is right, giving an example of how to act responsibly. You know, I had to think when I was talking with Helen Dorman this week, because I've often wondered with Helen, how did she do what she did, caring for Don for so long? That was hard work, wasn't it? Those of you who were with her all that time, I mean, yes, Don remained till the end the beautiful person that he was. He did not become angry or bitter or whatever. You know, even to the end, even when you weren't sure he really knew who you were, he was still that mild-mannered, loving man. You know, who even when he could not control his hand, you know, he at one point she was telling me this week, he accidentally hit her face and he went, "Oh!" It's like he knew. And every time I ask her, "Helen, how did you do it? How do you do this?" And her answer was not profound. It was, "Oh, because of our, you know, this ring on my finger, or because of the promises we made, or because," I mean, she could have said any of those things. You know what she said? "You just do what you gotta do. You just do what you gotta do." And I want to say that in a way is what faith is about. Doing what you gotta do, even when it seems like you're risking everything. Everything. So I ask you, when it comes to faith, why do you do what you do? Why do you keep on keeping on? Yes, I know, we've got all sorts of promises. We're living by a story. And we've got a God who in Scripture has proved faithful, and we have seen signs of God's faithfulness in our own lives along the way. But when it comes down to risking your life, risking, and you know the risks that you face throughout your days, when it comes to that, how do you do
what you got to do.
That's the question I'll leave you with.
But also we'll leave you with a hymn, a great hymn of faith. So why don't we stand, if we are able, and let's sing it together. How firm a foundation is.